Welcome to MuggleCast, your weekly ride into the Wizarding World fandom. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
And I'm Laura.
On today's episode, we are going to celebrate Back to Hogwarts. We are releasing this episode on September 1st. A new term at Hogwarts is upon us, and we will be discussing every Hogwarts professor and rating how effective they were based on what we read in the books over the years. So we have a big episode for everybody today. It could not be more perfect that our regular Tuesday release schedule falls on September 1st. So obviously we had to do something Hogwarts related.
That's actually why we shifted our release dates from Mondays to Tuesdays, was because we knew this year September 1st fell on a Tuesday. And
so next year we'll shift to Wednesday because it'll probably be on a Wednesday.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. It depends how you feel, Andrew. I don't want to mess with your recording or your editing schedule.
Thank you. Very thoughtful.
Trying to be, you know.
But yeah, I think who came up with this idea for this discussion in particular?
It was a group effort. Group think, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did. Just kidding.
Micah, tell us. No, great. How did you come up with this brilliant idea?
It was a group effort. We were thinking about it at the end of last episode, actually. We were, you know, that's what we do. We get together after we record because we hadn't had enough of each other last weekend. And we said, what can we do next week that could be cool and interesting and fun? So we decided, let's talk about the professors at Hogwarts, but let's really get into their teaching capabilities, not necessarily whether we like them or we don't like them, although I'm sure that's going to come up.
Right. Is Snape good? Is Snape bad? Who cares?
Right. How effective are they as teachers? That's what we're going to get into.
And I know when we were planning this discussion, one of the topics that was brought up was ratemyprofessors.com. This is a website where you can literally see reviews of your teachers at your school. I loved this when I was in college because before I picked my classes, I reviewed my teachers on ratemyprofessors.com. I didn't want any bad ones. And I didn't want anyone who was too hard or mean.
Yeah. So we actually kind of pared down the Rate My Professors metrics. And we're going to be looking at each of the Hogwarts professors based on quality and difficulty on a scale of 1 through 5 for each.
Did you guys depend on ratemyprofessors.com as well?
I didn't depend on it, but I definitely used it.
I had the junior version, the Rate My Teacher for high school. And can I just say, it was the coolest thing because it was like an IMDb, but for your teachers.
Mm, yeah.
Like you log in, you search a teacher, their profile comes up. It talks about them. But honestly, I feel like it wasn't as the criticism that you'd find on there of the teachers was not always founded because of the age level of the people that were rating them. So I did feel bad because a couple of my favorite teachers got like bum reviews.
Yeah, and it's like if somebody's holding a grudge, they'll purposely leave a negative review just to mess with the teacher. It's just like reviewing a restaurant, you know? You get angry at a usually good restaurant, and then you want to stick it to them.
So for me, I started college in the fall of 2000, so I'm guessing that this site was not around then. I definitely had heard about it as I went through college, but I don't think I ever used it. So I'm a novice when it comes to this. Hopefully I did a good job, Laura, in rating difficulty and quality.
Yeah, no, you did fine. It's too bad, Micah, because ratemyprofessors.com also has the chili pepper rating that you can apply to your professors based on how attractive the students find them.
Isn't that great?
It's funny you said that because I wasn't going to include something along those lines when we get to talking about Gilderoy Lockhart. So I'm glad that that's in there because maybe we can talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
Before we jump into our breakdown of each teacher, we did receive this voicemail from Danielle and it kind of relates to today's discussion.
Hi, MuggleCast. My name is Danielle, and I've been listening to you guys for almost 2 years now. I have a question for you all that has a bit to do with going back to Hogwarts. In Goblet of Fire, when the students come from Durmstrang and Beauxbatons, how are they still learning all of their yearly courses? I really can't picture Madame Maxime and Karkaroff stepping up to teach every subject. Maybe they just taught their specialty. So, I'm wondering, are these young witches and wizards the original distance learning students? Does the wizarding world happen to have their own version of Zoom? Let me know what you think. Also, I have to put it out there that I will 100% buy an Umbridge punching pillow or perhaps a t-shirt that, yes, lists every single time she sucked. Okay, I love you guys so much, and I look forward to listening to you every week. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks, Danielle. Love to hear from newer listeners. Yeah. That Umbridge pillow idea is really catching on.
Yeah.
We really figured it out.
I was going to say, we definitely have a theme going into 2021.
Well, we know that there was an age requirement, right? So obviously, you know, Durmstrang and Beauxbatons, they only brought students, like a small group of students who met that age requirement. I wonder if these were people who like tested out of that year's courses or something like that.
Yeah, they were 17. So it's kind of like their seventh year of Hogwarts where it's optional. I think that that's kind of what it was. At that point, you're only taking so few classes, like whatever Newt level classes. And I think that Karkaroff and Maxime were able to just instruct them.
Possibly. We do see video communication tools of some sort. I'm thinking of Crimes of Grindelwald when Nicholas Flamel is talking to people through that book. And of course, there's portraits. So there would definitely be something that's Zoom adjacent, I think.
Absolutely. And that was in 1928. Imagine what they've come up with
right.
in the 90s.
Decades of advancements.
And especially because there are moments in Goblet of Fire where you hear Hogwarts being talked down. So I wouldn't imagine that Maxime or Karkaroff would allow for their students to even join classes with some of the Hogwarts students. Because initially that's where my mind went. I was thinking to myself, are they just taking classes alongside the Hogwarts students? But I guess that's not the case. Were they learning in the carriage and the ship? And to Danielle's point, there was some sort of item that connected them to their home base.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Hogwarts and talk about all of the professors that we could possibly, well, not all of them are here, but that's okay.
We have a lot. Yeah.
We really do. And we have some bonuses that we threw in. But as we talked about at the top of the show, we really just wanted to talk about the effectiveness of these professors on Harry, on the rest of the students at Hogwarts. And as Laura mentioned, we're going to rate them. We're going to have a lot of fun with this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think the best place to start, just given the number of teachers, the turnover in this position, there was no tenure for Defense Against the Dark Arts. Every single year, there was a new professor, as we all know. So let's start with Professor Quirrell. Actually, just saw him on TV this morning with the Harry Potter series being on Sci-Fi. I think they are doing a Back to Hogwarts marathon.
Oh.
Is that what you
do we think he was like as a professor? Sorry, go ahead.
Is that what you do on Sunday mornings, Micah? You turn on the TV and look for Harry Potter? Yeah, watch it with your cereal.
I just say, Alexa, find Potter. And that's what, you know, the TV turns on, the music starts playing. No, actually, funnily enough, my dad was watching Sorcerer's Stone this morning when I came downstairs.
Oh, wow.
So I said, are you getting ready? I asked him, I'm like, are you getting ready to podcast?
he's supporting what you love. That's really nice. It's a sign of a good parent.
Yeah, no, he likes the movies. Professor Quirrell, what do we think he was like as a professor? He just seemed like he was average. Nothing special about him outside of Voldemort sticking out of the back of his head, but let's put that aside.
I know the writing that we have from Joe would kind of align with that, that he's a guy who wanted to feel important and thus dedicated himself to taking a year and finding Voldemort, which he did. Quirrell's the classic guy who got more than he was bargaining for. But I actually think he's actually pretty smart. He was a Ravenclaw. He seems to be capable of, I mean, even just finding Voldemort, that must have taken some skill. And so even though his whole stutter and everything he does is like an act for the Hogwarts students, I'd like to think that beneath that, he's actually capable and competent of setting decent lesson plans for his students. And the one thing to, I think about when we get through all of these professors is they're not only teaching Harry's level, they're teaching all the levels at Hogwarts. And so I like to think that Quirrell could probably pretty aptly handle the fifth, sixth, seventh year Defense Against the Dark Arts lessons, because that's, you know, where he is.
Yeah, I will say I get the impression that he probably would have been more effective as a teacher pre-Voldemort. Because obviously once he's linked up with Voldemort, his primary mission in life changes.
Yes.
So I find it hard to believe that teaching remains his number one priority. Eric, you kind of alluded to this, but Hagrid says like, oh yeah, Professor Quirrell, you know, that's really sad. He has a brilliant mind. He was doing so well when he just stuck to the books, but then he took a year off to get practical experience and something happened. And of course, we know what that something was, but the only practical experience he gained was alongside Voldemort, right? So, I mean, I think to Eric's point, that would probably make him very skilled in the realm of defense against the dark arts. On the other hand, I don't know that it would be Quirrell's priority to arm the students against that kind of threat, because he's on the dark side now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the writing on wizardingworld.com, it does talk about how Quirrell was bullied throughout his life. And so it's really driving him, as Eric, you mentioned this passage from J.K. Rowling about how he fantasized that he could be the man who tracked down Voldemort and at the very least learned some skills from him that he may then be able to take to the classroom and really show off. I think there's something about him that just he wants to prove himself. And I think that's why he goes after Voldemort in the first place. But yeah, I'm not sure. We don't get a whole lot of time with him. And I'm trying to even think back to the classroom time we get with him and the trio in terms of what they actually learn from Quirrell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do not think that he was horrible, even, you know, post Voldemort link up. I thought that he was probably, especially for first years from the vantage point that we see, competent is what I would say. But again, his priorities being what they were, I don't know that I would call him like a super effective teacher at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't think he had to be like a decent enough teacher to blend in? Because that's the other thing, is he's right under Dumbledore's nose.
Yeah. That was the point Right. I mean, the next teacher we discuss, that point's going to go out the window. But
old age.
No, but I think there is something to be said for Dumbledore appointing this guy to begin with. He must have seen something in Quirrell and believed he would be genuinely good teacher for the students.
Yeah. Are we ready for the ratings?
Yeah. Tell us what we did here.
Yeah.
Drop those numbers.
So we each rated the professors on a scale of 1 to 5 for difficulty and quality, and then averaged out those scores. So Professor Quirrell on difficulty gets a 2.5. He clearly does not come across to this panel as somebody who's out to try and be overly difficult towards his students, which I would argue is a positive. I think that if a professor is consistently so difficult that it feels like an uphill battle, then that impacts the quality of the professor. So I think a difficulty score of 2.5 is not bad. Quality, on the other hand, we landed at a 2.25. Womp womp.
Still though, I mean, kind of in the middle, so he's not the worst that we'll discuss today.
Yeah, not the best, not the worst.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of there.
That's how I feel about a lot of these professors.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the worst though.
Yeah, let's talk about Gilderoy Lockhart.
Me.
Who oh, he's here. Gilderoy, so nice of you to join us. Anything else to say?
Me.
Yeah, he's pretty much a fraud. So yes. He's a complete mess of a teacher. He's probably in this role for nothing other than to put another notch in his belt and to continue to raise his profile to say, I taught at Hogwarts. And
could write a book on that.
The one thing we talked about at the top of the show, and Laura, you can explain the chili peppers here. I put in a note about hot for teacher. So his good looks are something that are mentioned throughout Chamber of Secrets, going all the way back to Flourish and Blotts. And I think these good looks really cause Hermione and other students, at least initially, to look the other way from the fact that he is a mediocre teacher, because Hermione's somebody who's all about the academics, right? At least at this point in the series. And she's just so willing to just look the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think part of that, I think it's a combination of that and his profile. I mean, she already knew who he was before he was announced as their professor, right? And I mean, he's written so many books over the years that make it seem like he is an expert in this realm. So I can see why, especially as, you know, a young adolescent, you would see somebody who is allegedly so accomplished and intelligent and that they're also good looking, and you'd be like, wow.
Yeah.
Heart palpitations.
Yeah. I think we as students growing up had a crush on a teacher or two over the years. Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, yes.
I did.
I was pausing for a moment to think of like the right way to put this. That kind of thing is, I think, totally innocent if it is 1,000% one-sided.
Of course, yeah. But my point is that that's where Hermione was coming from. I understand what Hermione mm-hmm. was feeling.
And did those crushes allow us to overlook that those teachers' like capabilities or were
Lockhart
we attracted
is a
to that?
Special exception where we had to overlook those capabilities, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we see so Lockhart throughout the year is tested, especially, you know, even by the teachers towards the end. Everybody kind of gradually realizes just how incompetent that he is. He's unable to fix Harry's arm when it breaks at Quidditch. He's really just, his cowardice shows through. Mm-hmm. This is one of the weakest, like most cowardly kinds of guys, especially for the Defense Against the Dark Arts role. You need a little bit of bravado, but he's only got that false bravado. So.
Yeah. And let's not forget the point at the end of the book where McGonagall and the other professors just completely throw him under the bus. They're like, oh, yeah, you go find the basilisk. You go to the Chamber of Secrets, Gilderoy. Have
you
fun.
Were just saying last night how you knew where to find it. Yeah.
I love when stuff like that happens to anybody. Anybody who just lies and then gets caught in their lies and capabilities. And I mean, this was Dumbledore's plan to expose him as a fraud.
You think so?
That's what I read on the Harry Potter wiki.
Really? So Dumbledore put an incompetent teacher in this role just to expose him because he knew he was only going to be there for a year.
Right.
So why not bring to light all of his inabilities and subject young kids to that? That's wonderful, Dumbledore.
Yeah, you know, it's of course it's questionable, but this is something that J.K. Rowling wrote about on Pottermore. She said Dumbledore happened to have known two of the wizards for whose life's work Lockhart had taken credit, and was one of the only people in the world who thought he knew what Lockhart was up to. Dumbledore was convinced that Lockhart needed only to be put back into an ordinary school setting to be revealed as a charlatan and a fraud.
Oh man.
Yeah.
How lucky it was that the Chamber of Secrets would be open that very year and Dumbledore would get his chance to do that. So
that's a knock against Dumbledore, man. That's a nail in the coffin. That's like all of these children's education is at stake here.
Right.
You're going to put a known fraud in there just to, I don't know,
prove
do some
point.
Machinations. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Dumbledore's looking at this and being like, we're going to lose every single Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher anyway. These kids are screwed from the start.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And to go off what Laura said earlier, just the ineffectiveness, I think, really shows through in our quality rating of Lockhart. You know, obviously, just the consistent lies throughout the Chamber of Secrets. But I'm also thinking about, like, he removed the bones from Harry's arm. He couldn't contain a bunch of Cornish pixies. Like, he's just that bad.
Yeah. And don't we have him to blame for, like, the singing Valentines that happen in Chamber of Secrets? Like,
that goes too far.
Yeah. Well, no, I just, I tend to get suspicious of people like this who are like clearly ineffective, but create these like unnecessary like spectacles in order to distract from that, you know? Mm. So like when I see this happening, I'm like,
that
oh,
that sounds
this is...
so contemporary, Laura.
Yeah. It's definitely something that you could relate to the year 2020. Mm-hmm. Huh. So yeah, definitely always very suspect of that, like in an educational and professional perspective.
Our stance on this guy is pretty clear. He sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was like straight ones across the board on quality. So Gilderoy Lockhart, terrible.
Womp womp.
Awful teacher. Difficulty, he did a little better, 2.25. To me, this kind of felt like his classes aren't that hard as long as you interpret the materials the way he wants you to interpret them and you read his stupid books, you're probably going to get an okay grade.
Right.
Yeah. I would even say because of his ineffectiveness, it makes it that much more challenging for the students to have to do their work and get passable grades. So that's why I raised my difficulty level on him.
Yeah, I think I assigned a higher than usual difficulty just because the danger of an incompetent teacher, like the Cornish Pixies, like, you know, you could get attacked in this and he wouldn't be able to stop it. So
yeah,
it's like what that was lesson one. What fresh hell is he unleashed on the students later, you know, in the year?
Yeah, very true.
Well, hopefully these next two professors make up for Quirrell and Lockhart. Of course, Remus Lupin is one of many folks' favorite characters in the series, but he really shone through, I think, in his role of Defense Against the Dark Arts professor. And he's really the first real teacher in this discipline that Harry has. He teaches him how to face his greatest fear. He teaches him the Patronus charm and really goes above and beyond to give Harry private lessons to learn the Patronus charm. And I really think he prepared him to lead Dumbledore's army in Order of the Phoenix. All of the teachings that he kind of passes down to Harry, Harry uses. And it's not just Harry, though. All the other students really seem to love Lupin.
He's engaging.
Right. And as we spoke about, I think, during our Order of the Phoenix discussions, he's a father figure to Harry. And I think he's a father figure to most students who took his class. Not on as deep of a level as he had with Harry, but I think that's the vibe that he gives off.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even him with Neville and the Boggart.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's not doing that to like stick it to Snape. He's actually helping Neville confront his fear and help Neville kind of shine for a moment.
Yeah. I wonder if going into this year, were Harry and were all the students skeptical about who the next professor would be for this class? Because at this point, you have two who had to go, you know?
I think they probably were. But at the same time, you know, we only see this from Harry's vantage point, but he's coming back to Hogwarts with this, you know, newly attained knowledge that there's allegedly a psycho killer out trying to get him. So this probably isn't front of mind for him. I did want to say of Lupin, I've always thought the mark of a good teacher is someone who is not only an expert in their subject matter and, you know, pedagogically sound in their approach towards teaching, but someone who's able to step outside of that and offer some kind of like philosophical guide to students. I think that that relationship is so important. I know for me growing up and like going through college, I had a couple of professors who I really trusted. So I would talk to them about decisions that I had to make. And my favorite ones were the ones who never tried to tell me what to do, but who tried to guide me to a point where I understood what I needed to do. And I think Lupin really does this for Harry when they're having their lessons with the Boggart, Harry learning how to produce the Patronus charm. Harry learns more about the Dementor's kiss, and he opines that Sirius Black should have that done to him, and or Sirius Black deserves it. And Lupin just very calmly asked him, does anyone deserve that? Like, he really made Harry think about that for a second, because it's indeed a fate worse than death. And I just thought it was really cool that even though Harry's still pretty young, Lupin is laying the groundwork for Harry to approach these kinds of things with a greater degree of nuance than just like black and white, he deserves it or he doesn't.
Yeah, really well said. Like
mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it's just he knows all the he knows all the students' first names. He knows probably details about them that come up in class. He's a guy who's going to internalize and really care about you as a student who are in his class.
And he's probably one of the first teachers that we want to see more of. And yeah. I think Harry wants to see more of. He's very disappointed that Lupin, in effect, is resigning because he knows what's going to happen once word gets out that he is in fact a werewolf, that he doesn't want to put that burden on Dumbledore. And I think that again shows his character. And he's definitely, as I said at the top, one of the fan favorites, but I also think from a teacher standpoint, he's the one that probably arguably has the biggest impact on Harry and sets him up to ultimately defeat Voldemort.
So quality, fives across the board.
That's beautiful.
He's doing what he should do. He's doing everything right.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. And then difficulty, we gave Professor Lupin a 3.25.
Okay.
All right.
Well done, Professor. That to me speaks to like he requires a certain like level, quality of work.
Yeah.
As long as you are paying attention, being focused, and doing the work and showing progress, you'll probably do well in this class.
Exactly.
I guess I should mention this here. We also sent out a poll to our listeners on social media throughout the week. We said, who are the most effective professors at Hogwarts? And you could vote for as many professors as you wanted. And Lupin came in at number one. Lupin received the most votes. However, it was a tie percentage-wise between him and somebody else. But I won't reveal that until Ooh. We get to that professor.
I'm excited to learn. The one other thing that came to mind about Lupin as we were going through those ratings is he also had a way of making teaching fun. And I'm thinking back to the Boggart in the wardrobe and like the music playing and everything that kind of went along with that. And I was just wondering if we had any memories of teachers that would make class fun. So it didn't seem so, you know, academic at the end of the day, like, oh, we're going to sit down, we're going to open our books, look at the projector, take the notes, you know, like.
That was a good impersonation of a professor.
That was Bins. That was my Bins.
Yeah, I had a English teacher in seventh grade who we would do like, it would be the quiz day on like a Friday or whatever. And after we were done, he would just play guitar.
That's cool.
Oh, all right.
You know, Beatles
was
songs.
Was he good?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, he was the standard, like, you know, chords and stuff. But yeah, he was really, really good.
I took an Enlightenment literature class in college. And of course, a lot of that is it's rooted in the history of the French Revolution. And it's really important to have an understanding of that period in history in order to really be able to appreciate the literature of the time. So rather than put us through reading tomes of historical novels, my professor had us play one of those reacting to the past games. I don't know if you ever played those, but they're basically these like game booklets where everyone in the class is assigned a role and everybody has their own public and private missions. And we basically played out the French Revolution in class over a series of like 5 weeks.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. And I learned so much more from that than I would have from just being assigned a book.
That's awesome.
Let's talk a little bit about the Defense Against the Dark Arts professor in the fourth year, not Alistair Moody, but Imposter Moody, Barty Crouch Jr. And let's see how effective he was as a professor. I think we might be a little bit surprised here. He obviously teaches the students the unforgivable curses. I'm not sure that was part of the fourth year curriculum, but he chooses to do so anyway. And I think it's important that he does that. Obviously, when it gets to the Cruciatus curse, it's a really painful moment for Neville. But he does something that's really interesting. He raises Neville's confidence and he shows a level of concern for him, despite what we all know Barty Crouch Jr. is responsible for. So I almost wonder if this is a moment of remorse on his part. And Harry actually notes it's something that Lupin would have done in this moment. Aside from that, he doesn't tolerate any nonsense in his classroom. And I think just his appearance as Alistair Moody and his reputation from being an Auror inspires a level of fear and respect from students. So I wondered, do we ever have any do we ever have any teachers like that? Not necessarily from an appearance standpoint, but their nature just inspired a level of fear or respect from the get-go.
Yeah, sort of a tougher, grittier professor. I had one or two of those. But I also think it was in Barty Crouch Jr.'s best interest to be an effective teacher to help hide the fact that he was an imposter. He didn't want to give any clues that he wasn't who he was trying to be. And he was also appointed by Dumbledore, of course, so he didn't want to let him down. And he didn't want to give up the gig.
Yeah. One thing I struggle with is that it's later revealed the only reason he was nice to Neville and gave him that book was so that Harry would then know about Gillyweed, that it was like a weird couple degrees removed hint because he needs to get Harry to the graveyard. But I still think there's a part of Moody or Barty Crouch Jr. that knows how to work with students, that knows how to do that sort of a thing. And regardless, Neville's confidence was boosted. So, you know, I think that he's probably not that bad at teaching, actually. He has what it takes to recognize the student's individuality and to work with that in like an educational setting.
Yeah. And I think we have to remember, too, it's not just Harry and Neville that feel this level of, you know, respect towards Imposter Moody. It's the other students, too. Yeah. In book five, when Umbridge is lecturing them about all the horrible teachers they've had over the years, I think it's Dean Thomas who's like, yeah, okay, like that was actually a Death Eater, but we learned loads from him.
Thank you, Death Eater.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for most of the time, Barty Crouch Jr. was able to like have fun playing the eccentric ex-Auror who really learned, you know, he taught them constant vigilance of all things.
Yeah. Let's not forget, too, he turns Draco Malfoy into a ferret. And I wonder in that moment, too, is there just something that Barty is really enjoying about doing to Lucius's son? Because I don't think the two of them probably get along very well. Nobody seems to really like Lucius Malfoy from the Death Eater crowd. Like they all kind of thumb their nose at him. But yeah, I just think that he was a very effective teacher despite the fact that he was an imposter. And it's so interesting to look at. We've talked about two imposters so far, right? We talked about, well, three, I guess, technically, if you want to include Quirrell in there. But really, Gilderoy Lockhart being an imposter in terms of not knowing the subject material, and now Moody being an imposter, or Barty Crouch being an imposter, you know, like, but he's far more effective at his job.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, he definitely loses some points for performing unforgivable curses in front of fourth years and trying to kill Harry, ultimately. Resulting in the death of another student.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You know, and when we were talking just about imposters, it made me kind of think back. You ever have a teacher who you just know they shouldn't be teaching the material? Like they're also maybe like the football coach or the gym teacher, and like they're teaching social studies, or it's just like the district just gave them the job because they needed somebody to fill the role. And this way they didn't have to go and hire somebody else, because I definitely had that.
Oh, yeah.
All the teachers that taught me social studies were qualified to teach social studies, even if they were also the field hockey coach. I would hate to put a teacher in one box, Micah.
Oh, I will.
Yeah. Okay. So unfortunately, what Mike is discussing is not an uncommon narrative. I've experienced it too. I remember there was like 3 years in a row where they had a coach teaching sex ed when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah. My school too. Yeah.
I don't think it had anything to do with them being coaches. I think they were just bad. But I will say, in terms of shattering ideas and stereotypes, I did have a coach teach, I think it was biology. And I walked in on the first day and I kind of already had my preconceived notions of, was like, they have a coach teaching biology. He was amazing.
Really?
Yes. He stands out as one of my favorite teachers from my, you know, schooling years. And I really appreciated that that particular stereotype was checked for me. Because, you know, it's always good to make sure that you're not like making blanket assumptions about people.
Right, Micah.
No, we could have two very different experiences, but the same kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And my situation was very different. There were numerous times where there were teachers that were just not equipped to be teaching the subject. You could tell they didn't really study it, whether it be in college or once they graduated from college. So I know we have a lot of teachers that listen to the show. So by no means is it an indictment in any way. It's just our own experiences growing up in, you know, going through the educational system here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's get to rating Imposter Moody.
Right. So on quality, he gets a 4.25.
Wow. He's nice.
Really? I mean, high quality.
Yeah.
Lessons that we get from Moody. I think that the ethics behind some of those lessons can be called into question, but the students definitely learn a lot. Difficulty, we gave him a 3.5. So he's like bridging towards being a little harder, but at the same time, not so hard that passing his class is an uphill battle.
Now let's get to everyone's favorite defense against the dark arts, Professor Dolores Umbridge. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about her in our chapter by chapter discussions of Order of the Phoenix, but she is undoubtedly a control freak who actively stunted students' growth. She was a denier of Voldemort's return. She physically harmed students in her detention. And, you know, I thought after we kind of go through those pieces, we could talk a little bit about her teaching style, because she's using a officially mandated curriculum. And I think that we often talk about how we all respond to different types of learning styles, right? And she turns Defense Against the Dark Arts into a theory-based class, which I don't think, while some theory is good, it's practical at the end of the day, right? You want to be performing these spells, doing this defensive magic. We see how effective it is in how the students learn from Lupin and even from Mad-Eye or Imposter Mad-Eye. Mm-hmm. So she is just the worst.
I'm also just thinking from the perspective of wanting to keep your students engaged. They want to practice magic in this class. They don't want to just read a book. If they're just reading a book, they're not going to care about this course anymore. So it is important to engage them with some physical activities, so to speak, practicing the wand work, the spells in real time, so they can potentially use these one day.
Yeah, I mean, I just get the sense that she doesn't know. I think that this is the perfect role for her, because they were like, you don't need to know how to do any of this because you're not going to let them do it. So just make them read.
Right.
What are our thoughts on, because we've all gone through some form of state mandated testing in school and probably taken some courses that have had a lot of influence from local state government. Do we think that it is necessary, effective? Do we feel like sometimes it gets in the way of people's ability to be effective teachers if they're not able to kind of add a little bit of their own flair to it?
Agreed. Yeah. I took, so at least when I was in school here, your eighth grade year of social studies was called Georgia Studies. And so it was all dedicated to the history of Georgia. And let me tell you, there was very little mention of slavery in those teachings. And furthermore, I mean, I grew up in Forsyth County, which is, I mean, anybody, like, if you're interested, there's a book called Blood at the Root that's all about this place and how, like, how horrific the history is when it comes to segregation and the civil rights movement. And I felt, you know, looking back, I feel like we were robbed of an opportunity to be taught the truth about our state's history because they were so squeamish about it. And I feel like that's very similar to what, you know, Umbridge and the ministry are doing here. They're robbing these students of the opportunity to be prepared for what they're actually going to face in the world and the truths that they're going to learn about it once they get out into it.
And in terms of these professors adding their own flair, Micah, if they're not able to teach how they want to teach, they're going to be teaching less passionately. And then these students are going to be suffering for it. It's like when somebody has to read from a teleprompter, or it'd be like if somebody else was planning these podcasts and we were just working with what they gave us, like we would be less passionate about it.
Yeah. The funny thing about Umbridge is I think that she is passionate about what the ministry is telling her that she should be doing in the classroom. So it's almost like the opposite, where in most cases, I don't think that professors would like to be mandated, this is exactly what you have to do, and you have to do it this way. She is more about process, order. And so I think she actually enjoys this. And she's just, in my mind, not effective. Maybe there are people out there that think that she is an effective teacher. And I'd be interested to hear from listeners, you know, putting aside all of the nasty things that she does. I mean, we talked about she physically harms her students. I don't think that there's a person who would agree with that manner of teaching. Like detention is, I've ended up in detention. I'm sure all of us have to some extent. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you should be like carving scars in the back of your hand.
Right.
I think she's also just like career climbing. This is just the next step for her in order to be able to get closer to the minister and gain his trust.
Right.
So I think she would have done whatever he told her to do.
Interesting. Yeah.
And we know he's not the brightest bulb in the box.
Very true. All right, let's get on to the ratings. When it comes to quality, Umbridge gets a 1.75. Surprise, she's actually higher than Lockhart.
Yeah, way to go, Umbridge.
I mean, I'm assuming that if the content of the book is good, then you can still learn something from her class.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not as much as you would if it were practical, but if the book is good. I think the based on the cover, and I know you shouldn't judge a book by a cover, but if you base it on the cover that's in the movie, it really looks very boring and ineffective, but that could still be a good book in there.
I think we can all agree, though, that a quality score under 2 is just like, you might as well not even be in this profession. Leave.
And she wasn't for much longer.
Nope. Now let's talk about this difficulty score. We gave her a difficulty score of 3.5. What were y'all thinking when you applied difficulty scores?
I was just thinking about how the students struggled to get the education that they were hoping for. And I was thinking about how they struggled through her lessons and with her homework.
Yeah. I think every student who's not Harry has to tailor their learning experience, like readjust themselves and their own expectations in order to make it through this class alive. In order to get a passing grade, you've got to do what she wants you to do exactly how she wants you to do it. And it's just, there's a lot more effort that it requires to pass the class. So I would say that that's why I rated her higher for difficulty.
Yeah, I agree. The fact that the students had to form their own subclass just to be able to learn the material is a reason why I rated her as high as I did. And to Eric's point too about just you have to do it her way. And if you don't do it her way, the chances of you doing well are slim to none.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has anyone ever had a teacher like that where it was very clear they wanted you to do it their way? And as long as you did it their way, you would do fine.
I've had teachers and even professors in college that I've disappointed by not sticking 100% to the rules. But I wouldn't say that any of them grilled me in particular. I just think, you know, they had a way that they requested an assignment be complete. And I was constantly thinking out of the box.
Yeah, I think that's really where the difficulty with Umbridge comes in, because technically, if people just showed up to our class, opened their books and pretended to read, in terms of her class, they would probably do fine. But in terms of their own intellectual growth and being able to pass their exams, that made it way more difficult. So, you know, I think that this difficulty score isn't really linked to Umbridge's quality, because she doesn't have much of that to begin with. Right. It's really just about like the circumstantial nature with which she approaches education.
Yeah, she's
definitely,
she's harder to work with. And when you do, you get less quality out of her. So
for sure.
And remember, she sucked exactly 118 times.
Boo.
Boo.
Yeah,
not
we should
always
have made
for her teaching, though.
Her difficulty should have been 118.
It's time for a word from this week's sponsor, who actually could be of help to some of these professors. BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? Or maybe you want to be a better person for your students. Lockhart. We all hit roadblocks in life, and despite telling ourselves that we don't need any outside help, at some point you'll realize that you do need professional help. For years, I avoided getting help with my mental health because I thought I could take care of it myself. And that ended up being a big mistake. And once I seeked out help, I couldn't believe I waited so long. Don't be like me and push it off. Check out BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs in a variety of categories and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating with them in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. There's no going to an office every week. You'll simply do it from the comfort of your own home. There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas, and being able to access resources at home means it won't take much time out of your schedule. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as you do with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today, and we have a special offer for MuggleCast listeners. Get 10% off your first month of therapy at BetterHelp.com/MuggleCast. Again, visit BetterHelp.com/MuggleCast. That's BetterHelp.com/MuggleCast, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Okay, we're done with the DADA teachers and time to talk potions.
Yeah, well, actually a really great thread there, because Snape was the next in line for Defense Against the Dark Arts, but we're not going to talk about him as a DADA professor, mm-hmm. nor will we talk about the Karos, who I think can just get zeros across the board. Let's talk about Snape as a potions master and just his his overall effectiveness on the students of Hogwarts, I think probably the first thing to call out is that he did teach Harry, whether directly or indirectly, I think it's probably fair to say indirectly, his default spell of Expelliarmus. He does that during Chamber of Secrets, during the dueling club with right. Lockhart. Mm-hmm. And Harry forever uses that spell.
He's forever changed. He found his one true calling.
It's his signature OTT, spell.
His one true spell.
That's obviously unrelated to potions. But as far as potions go, he's clearly highly competent in the subject matter. He has a really high level of expectation of his students. And along those lines, you know, that level of expectation shines through in how he addresses his students. So I was wondering, is he a bully or is he just a tough love giver? Is he somebody who just like he wants to see more out of his students? He expects so much of them that he's going to, you know, throw some criticism their way. And these kids just need to be able to take it. They need to toughen up.
No, he's a bully.
He's a
yeah,
bully.
He is a bully.
He crosses that line. Yeah,
I like, tried. Well, I tried to sell it.
He calls first years dunderheads.
Yeah.
When you reread these books, you're reminded of how cruel he really was. He was cruel. He was a bully. So, no, it was not tough love. Maybe occasionally it was a little tough love, but first and foremost, he was a bully. Who yeah. was a good I mean, teacher?
Yeah.
Well, what he does to Neville's toad, he threatens to shrink it or he threatens to use whatever Neville produces for a potion on Neville's toad. And it's just like you can see what he's doing. He's trying to inspire Neville to, I don't know, pay attention, but Neville's doing his best. And so you're threatening the life of your student's pet just to like in some wayward attempt at inspiring the student, but all it's doing is causing fear and Neville's going to shut down and also then start feeling guilty that he killed his pet. So it's just awful. And he does it with what he does with Hermione's front teeth when they get enlarged and Snape says, I don't see a difference. I mean, awful. He's a huge, huge asshole. But he's also so there's nobody better to teach potions in terms of his knowledge of the subject material. Like Snape knows more about potions than any of us ever will in our lives. The problem is he actively, because of his mannerisms, because of his teaching habits, he actively inspires students to not want to learn. And that's the problem. So he's like, normally he'd be really good quality because you can really, really learn a lot from this guy. But his personality, hinders that greatly.
Do you think though, and maybe this goes to Laura's point here, that he has that same level of expectation for Slytherin as he does for the other houses?
That's kind of an interesting point. I'm thinking of when Malfoy makes Ron cut up his roots. Because I'm just like, there's no way Malfoy's potion is going to be any good, but Snape is not actively vanishing potions of the other students like he does to Harry. So yeah, he's definitely one-sided.
Yeah, I think in terms of, you know, like interpersonal interactions, I agree with that. But we have to remember Snape only takes students for his Newt level potions who have achieved an outstanding on their owls. And the way that I interpreted that is that that's across the board. Regardless of what house you're in, you had to have scored an outstanding in order to proceed with Professor Snape for potions. So I think in that regard, he does value effective work from students. And he's, I guess then it would just really call into question, like, is he grading them the same? I would think so. I can't see Snape.
I hope so.
Yeah, I can't see Snape being being biased when it comes to grading. However, if somebody makes a mistake, like if Harry and Draco make the same mistake, he's clearly going to penalize Harry more for that mistake than he would Draco.
Yeah. Oh, right. But also, it's still a form of classism, or it's still a form of, if you show favoritism to Slytherin, and are constantly lifting them up while putting the other houses down. Who do you think is actually going to test so well that they get an outstanding in there? It's going to be the people that are like, hey, this subject isn't so bad. This is fun. I'm inspired to learn more. Oops, I screwed up, but I'm encouraged by the teacher to like actually work for that outstanding. It's still a way of ensuring that the people in his new classes are mostly Slytherins or people who really care to be there.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
It's interesting that you say that, though, because I think if you look around at the other heads of houses who teach classes, none of them are as biased as Snape is towards Slytherin.
No.
And maybe that's because we're seeing it from Harry's perspective. But I'm just thinking through the other classes like Transfiguration, Charms, Herbology, and maybe they tend to favor Gryffindor in some cases, and that's just the way it is. But I just think that Snape is completely biased towards his house and looks to lift them up as much as possible and put down the others as much as possible. And to that point, when we talk about Slughorn, I think you see the difference in Harry's ability, not as well as other students, right? Like, they don't feel the pressure of Severus Snape hovering over them, and you know that there's going to be some nasty remark that's thrown their way, and they're going to feel put down and anxious and stressed. That's why Harry does so much better with Slughorn, putting aside the Half-Blood Prince book, you know, because he's free. He's free to just learn.
Here's something I thought about, and this kind of is mildly blowing my darn mind right now. Do you think Snape is looking for himself in these students? Do you think that he's looking for the Slytherin who's kind of in the corner somewhere, who's really got a knack for potions and the patience to make them work? And do you think that like the search for this other Snape to like mentor, maybe he like really wants to be a mentor character to that person, to be the teacher that he didn't have when he was going through? Is there anything to that?
Could maybe be. I think also, you know, we know that he doesn't really want to be teaching potions. He wants defense against the dark arts. So part of this could also just be maintaining an extremely high expectation to, you know, build his capital in order to make the case for getting a promotion, which is effectively what it would be in Snape's mind.
If you compare him to the other defense against the dark arts, well, I know potions, but like if you compare him to the other professor that was bullied in Quirrell, Quirrell doesn't take it out on his students. Snape does. Yeah. So I think that, you know, we don't know as much about Quirrell, but we do know that he was bullied growing up, and Snape obviously the same. And Quirrell, again, he obviously has these aspirations, but he's not taking out the fact that he was bullied on his students the way that Snape does. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And also bear in mind, you know, Snape's father figure was abusive. So that's, I mean, it doesn't justify any of his behavior, but that's the model that he was presented with in terms of how to discipline children. And that doesn't help.
That's a good point.
So I think we can all agree that Snape being just impossibly difficult, not just from a rigorous academic standpoint, but in terms of like coaching and mentoring and not really checking those boxes for most students, that definitely impacts his quality score. This might be a little controversial because there are a lot of Snape fans out there, but we gave Snape a 3.5 on quality.
It's hard to wade through the BS. If you're not a Slytherin, you're going to have a hard time. Not the hardest time, but a pretty hard time.
Yeah. And he's clearly so qualified. Like, we are not calling into question Snape's academic prowess and how, you know, he's totally willing to bend the rules when it comes to potions. I mean, we see this in Half-Blood Prince when, you know, Harry's going through the prince's potion book and he sees he's like completely flouting the instructions pretty frequently and being like, no, it works better if you do like half the amount of this ingredient or whatever. So he's clearly super masterful in this field. His biases and difficulty mentoring children stand in the way of him being a quality teacher, though.
Yep.
Totally agree with that.
And then, of course, we gave him a difficulty of 5. Fives across the board.
All right. So let's talk about Slughorn a little bit. We mentioned him just before. We were talking about Snape and his effectiveness as a potions master. But Slughorn, he's very unique in that he's only interested in those who are at the top of the class or have some level of notoriety or can elevate his status in some way. So I'm wondering, does he even care about the other students? I'm thinking of Weatherby and all the other names that he calls Ron. You would think with all the Weasleys he's probably interacted with over the years, he should remember Ron's last name. I mean, come on. He's got Ginny in the Slug Club.
Yeah. I think I probably have the memory. I couldn't pinpoint it, but of, you know, being in a class where there was a class favorite and not being the class favorite, it's isolating. You feel less good because you're not getting the attention that the teacher is paying, like a small person, like, or a small group of people. And that is detrimental to education. You're less inspired. You're less engaged. And I think it, like, being in Slughorn's potions class would very much be like that. If he's harping on Harry, but you're like, but wait, sir, I need feedback on my potion. And you're not going to get it as much because he's kind of one track mindy.
Yeah,
definitely.
I do think he's knowledgeable. I mean, he had the job before Snape did. He's, you know, comes out of retirement and teaches it, but
he taught Snape
everything he knows. But yeah, so we have a teacher here who is clearly, like, we know why he's at Hogwarts again. It's Dumbledore is he's there strategically. So with these appointments, it's just like Trelawney, like they're known to not be the greatest quality of teacher. They have flaws. Well, they had some of their flaws are obvious, but I think
I would say Slughorn's stronger than Trelawney. What we're starting to look at more so here is his personality, right, and his character that come through in his ability to teach effectively. And it reminds me also of when you have a teacher. Let's say you're in high school, and that teacher has been there a really long time. And they're like, oh, I had your mom, or I had your dad, or I had your sister, or your brother. Mm-hmm. Slughorn's very much like that with Lily, right? Lily was his favorite, and now he has Harry. So there's also that favoritism from that dynamic at play here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a challenge, too. I mean, if there are expectations placed upon you based on a parent or older relative doing really well in the class.
Yep.
I totally forgot that would happen. You'd hear, like, first day of school, you'd hear the teachers go, oh, I had your older brother, like when taking like census or whatever, mm-hmm. to different people. Not to me. I don't have an older brother.
On the flip side, like, though, your older brother could have sucked. So you had a very low bar to
You're much
jump.
Better than your brother.
Right. Exactly. You're showing up for class. You're already way better than your brother.
I think teachers would make those remarks to the younger brothers to, like, inspire them to be better.
Maybe, yeah.
Before we jump to the ratings, there is something to be said for the fact that Harry and the other students are more comfortable in potions and performing better. I know Harry has the aid of the Half-Blood Prince book, but just the fact that they're able to be more effective, there's less stress, there's less anxiety mm-hmm. at play, because we know just Snape inspires this fear almost from his students. And it's noted in Half-Blood Prince how just much more effective Harry was at potions because the stress levels, the anxiety levels were that much lower.
Yep. And I think that shows in our ratings. It's interesting because when it comes to quality, Slughorn and Snape both got 3.5s, but I think those 3.5s reflect very different things. Y'all let me know if I'm wrong, but to me, what gets in Slughorn's way of having a higher quality score is the fact that he's just interested in collecting people. You know, mm-hmm. he's interested in how many notable people he can sort of take under his wing so that he can later claim, you know, success based on their performances once they leave school and go on to do great things. So, you know, I think to a point Eric brought up earlier, it prevents him from being able to give attention to students that he considers to be maybe less notable. So somebody like Ron doesn't do quite as well in this class because he's not getting the attention he needs from the teacher. And then in terms of difficulty, we gave him just a solid 3.
Yeah. If you show up, if you put in the work, you can pass.
Yeah.
And learn, and you'll learn something. That's a 3.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Definitely a way better experience than Potions with Snape.
Mm-hmm. Well, one professor I think that students generally had a positive experience with, though maybe strict at times, is Professor McGonagall. And I would just flat out say she's fair and balanced. She's tough. She has a strict edge to her, but she damn well knows her material and she cares a lot about the students, I think, regardless of what house they're in. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, across the board, she is probably the most fair and balanced professor that there is at Hogwarts.
For sure. Wow. Yeah. I think she hits all the right notes. She knows how to effectively teach and still be friendly and still hear the students out.
You know what I love about McGonagall is I agree with the point that she's, you know, she does have a strict approach. She's very, like, her classroom management as a former teacher, I'm just like, oh, yes, girl. Like, she's so good. but the other thing is she is able to recognize when students have capabilities that are sort of beyond the scope of maybe the classes they're in or their age. Perfect example, putting Harry up to be the seeker for the Gryffindor Quidditch team his first year when he shouldn't have been allowed to do that. She watched him exercise a level of competency and capability that was well beyond his years. And rather than, you know, quash that by saying, oh, you have to wait, she said, hey, you know what? Let's go ahead and give you this opportunity. So I love that, yes, she has, you know, she has sort of like her scales in mind and is very particular about where people fall and when things should happen. But she's not so strict that she's not willing to bend the rules when it might make sense for somebody's academic and social growth.
Hmm. I'm glad you pointed it out. I also get the sense that she understands the limit of her students. She, well into the later years, is still assigning like 2 full pages of parchment, like just insane amounts of homework. But it's almost like with McGonagall, the more risk, the higher reward. Like the more effort you put into her class, the more you're going to get out of it, but you will get more out of it. You can become really highly trained and skilled from just attending her classes. She's like just a really high functioning educator.
Agreed.
And I think she does have, you know, that soft spot. I know you had this here, Laura, for Harry. I think she does for Gryffindor too. We see it shine through in moments. Not as overbearing as Snape and his sort of, you know, love for Slytherin, and love is even the right word, but the other thing about McGonagall is the respect that she commands, regardless of house, right? There's just something about her that creates this level of respect from all the other houses at Hogwarts. You know, you see maybe Malfoy and some of the others screwing around at times, even Harry at times screwing around, but like it's after like that initial moment that they know not to do it again.
Yeah.
And I just think that, again, she's the OG. Forget about Dumbledore.
All right. Well, we gave Professor McGonagall a quality score of 4.75 and a difficulty score of 4. So this to me is very much somebody who is highly skilled in their field and does demand and expect quite a lot of her students, but is not impossible to work with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm happy with this.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Let's talk about Dumbledore, speaking of.
As a professor, not a headmaster.
Okay.
Right?
All right. I think so. Somebody dropped him in here under Transfiguration. Well, we haven't seen a whole.
Yeah, well, we know what his last position was, presumably.
Well,
defense against the dark arts.
Right, yeah. So in Fantastic Beasts, turns out he's actually defense against the dark arts, despite being told he was Transfiguration. Maybe we'll learn why he switched courses. But we do get a couple small clues in Crimes of Grindelwald. And in fact, these were some of my favorite scenes in that movie. In addition to seeing him teach DADA for a minute, we also see him speaking with Leda and trying to be helpful on a personal level. And to me, that struck me as a sign of an effective teacher, because he's not only helping students with their coursework, but also helping them get through some personal things as well. He's being a friend. He's being a father figure, like we were saying with Lupin. So I really admire him for that.
Oh, definitely. And he's the kind of guy who has enough room in his brain for each student's personality. He's able to ask them about themselves in a class setting, too, and really use that to their advantage, to put them at ease, to help them out. Yeah, he's very, very, very highly competent, and he gives the illusion that he really cares about these students.
Yeah, and I think that he also breeds in the students that he's working with the capability of critical thought. He's not the type of professor, you know, if somebody gives an incorrect answer, to smack them down and be like, "You're stupid." That's not who he is. He very much wants to help students sort of like work their brains to figure out, okay, so tell me a little bit about why you think that might be the case. Or like, I think about all of the wonderful conversations that we see Harry have with Dumbledore over the years. You know, we can start with the Mirror of Erised, where, you know, Dumbledore is like, "What do you think this mirror shows?" Harry says, "Well, it shows me my family." And he was like, "I assume that it must show other people their families." And Dumbledore is what, like, "Well, there might be something more here. Let's dig into why you think it shows you your family." And he helps Harry work that out without, you know, explicitly telling him, "You're wrong. Here's the right answer." And I think Harry learns a lot more that way than he would from like a Snape method.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Breadcrumbs. He drops little breadcrumbs.
Yeah. Dumbie. He knows the answer and he's holding all the cards.
Dumby crumbs.
And then he lies. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I will say, I think that sometimes his coyness, I think, detracts from his quality. Like, there are clearly points where there is information that I think is critical. And if he's constantly exercising this, like, "Oh, let me play the teacher and have you work it out yourself," it's like, no, there's literally like Death Eaters like taking over the ministry. We could use this information now. I think that that is and we know that he actually deliberately tries to slow Harry down in Deathly Hallows.
Yep.
So that knocks off some of the quality for me. I don't know about you guys.
It would have been cool to have him as a substitute teacher at one point in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it also would be cool at some future point to give him a rating on how he did as far as just hiring all these professors.
Oh, God.
Some of them were already there, but others... Yeah, there's some question marks. His security rating would be negative.
Yeah.
I don't think we could even give him a zero.
Starting to sound like a security nightmare. Security nightmare.
There it is.
So for Professor Dumbledore, we gave him a quality score of 4. He's obviously very skilled in a number of realms and a good teacher. Mm-hmm. And then for difficulty, we gave him a 3.5. So definitely can be challenging, but not impossible. And he really wants to help people learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, we have Professor Flitwick, who's highly skilled. He treats students with respect. He's patient and he rewards good performance. And there was this little blurb from WizardingWorld.com that I thought kind of summarized him pretty well. As head of Ravenclaw House, Flitwick was known to always have his door open to any of his charges who found school life tough. When Hermione was feeling blue about her exam performance, Flitwick was more than happy to cheer her up with the news that not only had she passed, she'd scored an impressive 112%. As Fred Weasley once observed, old Flitwick usually gets everyone through their exams all right. Let's not forget about the protective charms he put up both in Prisoner of Azkaban when Sirius Black was on the prowl and Deathly Hallows in that final battle. So all in all, I would say a solid professor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
I would say he's like McGonagall in that he does everything right. He does what he needs to do. He's a good person to the students. He just wants to be a good teacher.
Yeah, and he also respects innovation. I feel like this is something that he and McGonagall have in common. You know, they definitely have their curriculums and their particular rules when it comes to, you know, the student-teacher relationship. But like, for instance, Flitwick is the one who lets Fred and George leaves like a bit of their swamp after they leave because he just thought it was a really good bit of magic. Mm-hmm. So he's not going to stifle his students' creativity by being like, by cleaving to his books, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So
I think we can rate him.
Yeah. Quality, 4. And difficulty, 3.25.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'd pick up that.
Who started throwing in the half and quarter percentages?
No, that's just how it averages out, right?
That's how it averaged out.
Come on, Micah. Yeah, so
there's four of us. One of us gave him a, one of us gave him a 4 and the rest of us gave him a 3, right?
I think that something like that.
Yeah.
See, you're better at math than I am. So.
Oh, yeah. But the thing with Phileas Flitwick and Sprout, who we're talking about next, I always find them to be like probably really good at what they do, teachers, but their subject just doesn't come up that much, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's so important to talk about charms and like, and Flitwick putting up the shield or whenever the kids are camping and, you know, they're using charms in that magic. I tend to often forget that that's actually what charms is. I think of charms as being like useless bits of magic. So I think like that reflects negatively on Flitwick to me. No, but I'm wrong. I'm saying that I'm wrong. My brain wants to go charms. When are they ever going to use that? But they're there. They're there in the background protecting our heroes. And yeah, everything that the Weasley quote really gets me that, you know, Flitwick is going to take the time to help you out and make sure you can, you know, get a passing grade and that you understand the material. And that's what you really want out of any teacher.
Yeah, he's definitely lays like important groundwork, right? Thinking about Wingardium Leviosa, right? It's both the cause and the solve for the troll in the dungeon.
Mm-hmm. If only he knew that was coming.
Right. But a lot of things he teaches, to your point, and you think about Deathly Hallows and their camping, it's a great point. I didn't even think of that. But yeah, he is, he's definitely one of the best. And, so is Professor Sprout when it comes to herbology. See, she's a pretty competent professor. And I just wondered, to the point of not showing up a whole lot throughout the rest of the series, did she kind of fizzle out after Mandrake Mania?
I mean, that was a high point. That was
yeah.
Like, okay, my career is done. I correctly predicted a school-wide disaster. And
like Eric was getting at earlier, this is a standard teacher, a standard course. It's stuff that's not crazy important, but it's necessary for the overall Wizarding World education. And, you learn about plants, and maybe that'll come in handy later when you're going through some Devil's Snare or you're running into some mandrakes or any of these other
ones. I think that this is important for potions because
this
is going to be the source of where so many of your ingredients come from. So I would argue that to be good at potions, you probably have to be good at herbology.
And for that reason, I'm sure Snape and Sprout had a very close working relationship.
Closer than you know. Well,
oh, God.
There's definitely fan fiction out there. Right, Laura?
Oh, everything. Anything you've thought, there is a fan fiction for it.
Slughorn and Sprout get along, we see. And Gilderoy Lockhart and Sprout do not get along, which shows you everything you need to know about Sprout. No-nonsense woman. But as head of my house, Hufflepuff House, I do wish that she were more present in some of the later books.
It does seem, though, that she's very influential, despite being the head of Hufflepuff, on Neville. And his growth and development, we know that has a real passion for herbology. He eventually becomes professor, presumably taking her spot. So I think that's a really great example, though, of, you know, not showing any sort of house bias and really just being willing to teach a student because that student is passionate about a certain topic.
That's a good point.
And she also had a really great moment in Half-Blood Prince that I forgot following the death of Dumbledore. She said that if a single pupil wants to come, then the school ought to remain open for that pupil.
Nice.
They were debating whether or not Hogwarts should stay open. And yeah.
That is a very Helga loyalty. Way of...
Mm-hmm.
That is such a Helga thing to say.
It really is. Like, her Hufflepuff is showing, like, in the best possible way in that moment.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of ratings, we gave Professor Sprout a quality rating of 3.75 and a difficulty rating of 3. So, like Micah said, solid professor.
Yep, very much so.
Well, speaking of solid professors, let's talk about Rubius Hagrid.
Oh.
He's solid.
No.
And I mean solid in terms of build, yes. Not in terms of teaching ability.
Poor Hagrid. He thinks he's being helpful, but he's just not as effective as he could be. And he's not self-aware that he's not being effective and the dangers that he's introducing to these children.
Oh, yeah. He completely overlooks the fact that the reason he's able to even go and see the Akramantulas in Aragog is because of his close personal friendship. You know, he has no concept of the fact that the only way he's allowed to handle half these creatures most of the time is because he's him. And so when he tries to then bring that to the students, it just is a disaster all the time.
Yeah, I think that there's also, like, we've talked about this a couple of times today, about, you know, knowing when it's appropriate to stick to your curriculum versus when it's appropriate to step outside of it. I'm not a believer that the curriculum is always right and that there, you know, I think there are opportunities to expand upon it that actually allow students to learn more. But Hagrid is a case of somebody who needed a curriculum. He didn't have much experience with developing something like that. And he just goes straight for the more like advanced, cool lessons that the kids aren't ready for. Hermione notes, I think in Prisoner of Azkaban, that hippogriffs are like a fifth year thing.
Wow.
So why are we doing them now?
To save Sirius. No, it's a great point. And going back to something earlier that I touched on, you know, I'm all about giving chances to people. But I wonder here, is this an example of where you just have the need to fill a role and you're putting somebody in that role that isn't the best possible person to teach that subject? Mm-hmm. So you're taking in this case, the person responsible for the upkeep of the school, essentially the grounds, and giving them care of magical creatures just because they have a strong passion. I'm not questioning his knowledge. I think that he's very knowledgeable when it comes to magical creatures, but I think his passion really like overtakes his knowledge and makes him one of the less effective teachers in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And really he was set up for failure. Mm-hmm. I think that Dumbledore really lets Hagrid down by not preparing him better for this role.
Could you, like, tutor him on how to teach or whatever? Because, I mean, Hagrid's schooling stopped at year two, so there's a couple of, like, gen eds for
teaching and tutoring. And,
yeah, huge ones that Dumbledore doesn't seem to compensate for when giving Hagrid the promotion.
Yeah, and he needs encouragement from some of the students, right? Like, he'll always be asking the trio, how am I doing? Right. Like,
yeah.
And like, while that's cute in the way that it comes across on screen, he shouldn't need that. Like, students should find ways to be supportive of teachers. I'm not saying that, but I think that the encouragement he's looking for here is kind of like, hey, yeah, I'm trying out something new for the first time. I've never done it before. How am I doing? Like, if you had a teacher in school that did that, what would you think? Like,
oh God.
You're just not equipped to do this job.
Well, and also they're all friends with Hagrid, so he's
they're lying blurring on top of it.
Yeah, he's blurring the line between friend and student. with the trio. Yeah, I think that's really that's difficult for him.
So how did we rate him?
We gave Rubius Hagrid a quality of 2. He's trying. He really wants to do the thing and he wants students to learn from him. Mm-hmm. But he just, like, between, you know, being set up for failure with his own educational background and then being set up for failure by his employer, there just wasn't, like, he couldn't go very far on his quality score.
No.
Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And then we gave him a difficulty of 2.25. You show up, you show a respect, a healthy respect for these creatures, and pay attention, you'll do fine.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Don't insult the hippogriff.
Pretty basic, yeah, pretty smart thing.
And the professor that steps in for Hagrid while he is away, and then, of course, when he gets banned by Umbridge, is Wilhelmina Grubbly Plank. Didn't know that was her first name, so... Great first name.
I think it's Wilhelmina.
Oh, Wilhelmina. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
How about Willie? Can we?
Willie, sure.
Go with Willie.
Professor Plank.
Willie Grubbly.
Professor Walker Willie Plank.
GP. Anyway, this is, I just thought this was a perfect example of where the substitute teacher is better than the actual teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
If we've ever had that experience.
I totally had this happen.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had sub teachers that we really loved. But I, looking back, I can't parse whether it was because we just didn't want to have the actual teacher or because the sub like knew us personally. And I don't know. It was just more friendly. But yeah, Grubbly Plank, here's a woman who has all the proper training that Hagrid lacks. She also follows a curriculum. And like Harry wants to dislike her. But at the end of the day, after her class, really can't say a bad word against her. She, you know, students are learning. They're not doing, like, if she had to give them a useless creature like a flobberworm, apologies to all the flobberworm appreciates out there. But if she had to give them flobberworms, you better bet they're going to come out of that class knowing what the purpose of a flobberworm is, and they'll have some kind of appreciation themselves. Hagrid will just hand them this, say, here's a bucket. You know, and it just won't, he won't convey the importance. And so she's a much better teacher.
Yeah. And the trio kind of begrudgingly admits this to themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they realize they're learning a lot more.
But their heart's with Hagrid, so they can't.
Yeah.
They got to stay loyal.
Well, our ratings for Professor Grubbly Plank, quality 4.
That's twice as many.
Yeah. And difficulty 3.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have a few more professors to discuss, but first it's time for a word from our second sponsor this week, Beachbody On Demand. Choosing an at-home workout can be overwhelming, but you've maybe thought of getting into a workout routine because you know it'll be good for you and you know it'll help you avoid crashing during the day. Beachbody wants to take all the anxiety out of a workout and let you enjoy a fun, simple, and affordable way to get your body moving. You don't have to spend hours searching for a program that is right for you. Beachbody On Demand offers thousands of workouts so you can select the type of program that will get you motivated and started on your fitness journey. Just give it a try and you will immediately start noticing differences in your mood and your body. Plus, you're going to feel more productive for having worked out and you're going to have more energy during the day. It is such a game changer. Beachbody On Demand lets you achieve your goals from the comfort and safety of home, and it's much cheaper than a gym membership. This is the company behind all the routines you've heard about before, like P90X, Insanity, 21 Day Fix. Now check out some of Beachbody's newest programs like Morning Meltdown, 80 Day Obsession, and start every day strong. For someone like me who has been working out for a while, I recommend checking out Morning Meltdown. As you can tell from the title, it's meant to be done in the morning, and it will leave you feeling energized and productive through the rest of the day. I love working out in the mornings. Workouts across Beachbody are as short as 10 minutes, and tons don't require extra equipment, so they're easy to fit into your life. There are programs that can work for any experience level, whether you're just getting started or you've been working out for a while. They have programs that can suit your needs. Right now, our listeners can get a special free trial membership when you text MuggleCast to 303030. You will get full access to this entire platform for free, all the workouts, the nutrition information, and support absolutely free. So do it right now. Just text MuggleCast to 303030. Okay, now let's look to the future.
Getting a good workout talking about divination. How's that for transition? I tried, failed miserably.
I'm looking to the future and our listeners are more in shape.
There you go.
They're more energized.
So, Sybil Trelawney.
Psycho.
This is a hard one because I think that just by the nature of the subject, and I know we're in a school that is all about magic, that it's still looked at, like, I don't understand why divination is looked down upon so much.
Well, I think we can blame Sybil because she just comes off as
her
a kook. Yeah, it is, well, kind of, because I mean, you all of her, most of her predictions are not accurate, right? And the way she comes off in these classes, it's like this woman, there's something seriously wrong with her, and it's not because she can see the future.
Well, okay, so everything that's wrong with Sybil, like, you're right, but I'm going to blame Dumbledore for them, because Dumbledore never tells her that she made an adequate prophecy. She never knows this, and had she known, that would have drastically changed the way that she sees herself, and it would have drastically impacted her teaching style. If it's for her own good that Dumbledore doesn't reveal this to her, but the fact that like she herself is in such denial over whether or not she really has the skill, like she thinks she does, but she doubts herself, and she has a huge drinking problem that evolves as a complication of all of this. If Dumbledore were more honest with her, she could be a more effective teacher.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I also think that divination is tough from the start because you can't really learn divination. Like, you can learn the theory behind it, but Trelawney just has a genuine gift, even if it is on an infrequent basis. Mm. It's not something you can learn, right?
Yeah,
right.
I think that's probably true.
I think that's fair. It's interesting to contrast her with Ferenc and his teaching style. And I wonder, again, kind of how we were talking about Professor Grubbly Plank stepping in for Hagrid, where the substitute is better than the original. Is this also the case where, you know, just because Ferenc approaches things with a different perspective and it's more about learning to read certain signs and interpreting them? But kind of to your point, Laura, when it comes to the actual art of it and the fortune telling piece of it, I wonder if it is something you just have to have within you, that it's not. Mm. It's not something that can be learned over time.
Yeah.
And while I don't think it's entirely her fault, she's not the most effective professor at communicating this to people. She wants to treat this like any other subject that anybody can learn if they just follow her lead. Mm. So for quality, Professor Trelawney gets a 1.5 from us.
Sorry, girl.
Yeah. Difficulty is 3.25.
Yeah, because nobody knows what the hell is going on.
Yeah, what are we supposed to do?
And they always have long homework. They always mm-hmm. have, like, essays about dreams, about teacups. She gives them a lot of homework, and there's very little reward for that.
Yeah. She also is easily offended, which is something that Ferenc also exhibits, too, when it comes to divination. So I wonder if that's just, like, a trait that is in professors who teach divination.
Maybe it's because they know students and maybe fellow professors are very skeptical of their abilities. So they've just naturally built this insecurity.
I feel like divination would do much better as a college level course.
Yeah.
Or whatever is beyond Hogwarts as far as next level education. I don't know that it belongs in a school like Hogwarts.
No, I mean, it really doesn't. Dumbledore kind of admits that. When he talked about going to meet with her to potentially give her a teaching post, he was kind of on the fence about even offering divination. Mm. So it's only happening because he needs to keep tabs on her.
Right.
That's interesting.
And then just quickly on Ferenc, he tries to offer a different perspective to the students, I think, on the whole, not just with respect to divination. He really tries to get them to not think of themselves as being the center of the universe when it comes to being humankind. And he offers multiple interpretations of the same thing, which I think is an important quality in a teacher, in any teacher. To allow for that.
Yeah. He's the one who tells all the kids, you know, there's really no one answer. And yeah, divination is all about guessing and you don't really know till it's true. He just has like a real peace with this subject matter. He has a real peace with, you know, this is a slow process. I don't expect if you studied divination for your whole life that you'd get it. Most of our centaur group doesn't even get it. He's just like, okay, you know, we're going to learn about some stuff. And there's very low, I think, pressure. And I think Ron and Harry, in the one class we see of his, they really respond to that.
Right.
Yeah. I think the difference between centaurs and wizards here is that centaurs kind of view all of existence a bit like ants next to a highway. Like, how could ants like conceive of the idea of what building a highway right next to their nest would mean for them? It's just like outside of their scope. And I think that centaurs are looking at the universe and signs and star reading as it is what it is. And there is nothing that we can do to control or influence this outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas wizards and human beings on a more general scale, we love to try and control things that we can't control. And so I think Ferenz really sees a great deal of arrogance in the human approach towards divination.
Yeah, I totally agree. So he got a higher overall rating.
Yes.
Than
so
Trelawney.
Quality. Yes. Quality 3. Difficulty 3.5. He's pushing students outside of their comfort zones, but he's also accepting of the fact that none of them are ever actually going to get this. So he's like, listen.
Especially
we can...
Lavender. Oh.
Ooh.
Well, maybe she will, right, Andrew?
Yeah. Yeah. We're waiting.
That was a low blow. I'm sorry. All right. What better subject? What better boring topic to end our discussion of the professors at Hogwarts than with a history of magic and Cuthbert Binns? And he just reminds me of your typical professor who sticks to the subject matter and drags on for an hour or however long your class is every class, right?
Right.
And what he's saying, it's important. He covers the material. But the way he lectures, it just makes the class so damn boring. And I've definitely had professors like that.
Oh, yeah. Who are still like lecturing off the same yellowed piece of paper they've been using for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I've had that.
Yeah. I feel bad. You know, it's one of these classes we keep mentioning. It's just one of these classes you got to have at school. You got to get through. They are important lessons, even though they're boring. And I think that was kind of J.K. Rowling's point, to make this class boring. That's the joke of it, that it's boring as hell, because we've all been there. So maybe she was trying to make it very relatable.
Yeah. Also, if Harry had been paying attention in that class, we would have seen a lot of things coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The goblin revolutions. Mm-hmm. Like, there's really a lot actually to be found in there. I love how much of it seems like it would be relevant if Harry were paying a little bit more attention.
And as far as whether or not he was any more lively when he was alive, I think we're told, right? Didn't he just literally die in that position and he just kept lecturing? Like, that's just who he is. And it's unfortunate because I feel like having a course that's taught by a ghost would have been a really cool thing for the series. But instead, J.K. Rowling just made it super boring.
But that was the point. I think.
I know. Yeah.
Does anybody love history class?
If it's well, yeah.
I did okay in history. Yeah.
History, hated it.
No, history, you probably didn't have a great teacher. History, if taught well, is so fascinating and exciting.
Ugh.
There's a lot of people right now that could benefit from learning history.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm street smart, not book smart. So I hate history.
Yes, you are.
But the thing is,
unless it's a YouTuber teaching me,
book smarts aren't necessary in order to gain some at least competent understanding of history and its impacts on our present.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we can cut to the writing. You know, quality not great. not terrible. We give him a 2.5. He could stand to update his teaching methods.
I'm surprised at the difficulty, though. I thought it'd be higher.
Yeah, we gave him a 3. Yeah, I think we had different interpretations. I know like half of us rated him pretty high. The other half rated him lower.
I think just because I think he's a standard teacher, I think I may have put him at 3, just right in the center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You kind of need to adjust to his lecture style of teaching. It might be a little higher than 3 for that reason.
I gave him a 5.
Because he's the only one who like really, wow.
I'm with Ron and Harry in terms of my difficulty rating of bins.
Yeah, I think that I definitely agree that his lecture style makes comprehension more difficult.
What I want to know is like, does he hang out with like Nearly Headless Nick and the Fat Friar? Like, what does he do after class? Like, he just goes through the wall and that's it?
Like, which crowd does he run in? Is he with the professors or the ghosts?
I would peg him as somebody who just goes home and watches TV all day.
Huh. Netflix guy?
Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
On next week's episode of MuggleCast, Andrew tells us what TV shows and series are our favorite.
But yeah, that does wrap up our discussion. Quick shout out to Professors Sinestra and Vector, who we didn't mention, but I don't think there's much there. Mm-hmm. But there were just a few people I think we wanted to touch on briefly. Eric, you had put down here that they're teachers for Harry throughout the series, but they're not professors at Hogwarts.
Yeah, we don't even need to rate these guys since they're not professors. But Harry learns a lot from various, I don't know if you even want to call them father figures, but there is something to that. I mean, Arthur Weasley in particular, the don't trust anything that thinks for itself if you can't see where it keeps its brain. I actually, in choosing Marauder's Map from Prisoner of Azkaban as my favorite chapter last week, I saw this actually gets brought up. Harry thinks of it all in all in his by himself when he gets the map. He thinks of Arthur Weasley and Arthur Weasley's excellent advice, which helped with Ginny the previous year. And then Harry just goes and disregards it. But it does come up. So he absolutely, you know, Arthur Weasley had a good point. And I think Harry learns a lot from Arthur, I think, indirectly. You know, and it's nice to see a wizard who likes muggles. So there's that.
Definitely.
And last week, one of our listeners wrote in about Bill Weasley being like the perfect role model for Harry.
That was
so
our
co-host. Oh, so I wanted to shout that out. That Bill also is able to, and especially in the weeks that they're at Shell Cottage, like Steph was saying, really, you know, Harry learns a lot based on Bill's life experience. And then who could forget my favorite mentor of all time, Sirius Black? He has the famous line in book 4: "If you want to know what a man is like, look at how he treats his inferiors, not his equals." I'll be damned if that line isn't like relevant today still. Mm-hmm. It's just a great line from Joe. And Sirius is telling Harriet to kind of give Harry, it's kind of like what you were saying, Laura, about Dumbledore asking questions of students and of Harry during Mirror of Erised. Mm-hmm. Sirius is like, hey, I need to convey to you what Crouch or like really feels and acts like. So here's an example that's going to make you think about this. And then after you do, you're going to understand.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've always thought that that quote was a bit revealing about Sirius and maybe even J.K. Rowling, that he uses the word inferiors, because just by using that word, you're already looking at some group of people as being less than.
Well, what word would you replace that with?
I'd have to think on it. I was thinking about it, but it's maybe not even say it that way.
Oh, possibly. I mean, but I like how direct it is, because like he's not talking about anyone other than the viewer placing that value judgment on who's inferior and who's equal, or he's talking about the person who you're judging. So if Crouch thinks that somebody is an inferior to him, he's going to treat them differently than somebody that he thinks is an equal to him. So he kind of turns it around to where it's talking about your own ego assessing people.
So, like I mentioned earlier in the episode, we did ask listeners who are the most effective professors at Hogwarts, and I mentioned that Lupin came in at number one, but actually tied with Lupin was McGonagall, also at 17% of the vote, though she did get a few less votes than Lupin did. At number three was Phileas Flitwick with 13%. Then Sprout at 12%, then Imposter Moody at 10%. Grubbly Plank came in next at 9%. And it goes down from there, though Lockhart received 0% of the vote, as did Umbridge, as did Quirrell. And Trelawney received 1% of the vote, as did Binns. So you can see the complete results on MuggleCast.com. We'll include a link in the show notes. But thanks to everybody who participated in that poll. And I think this roughly aligned with our thoughts as well. So that was good to see.
We weren't far off. I think we'll get a good amount of response to this episode, just given some of the criticism that was out there for some of these professors.
Yes. And if you do have any feedback about today's discussion, send it on in, mugglecast@gmail.com, or use the contact form on mugglecast.com, or use the voicemail line 1-920-3-MUGGLE. That's 1-920-368-4453. It is time now for Quizzitch.
Last week's question, who wrote the Standard Book of Spells, grades 1 through 7? The correct answer was Miranda Goshawk. Congrats to everyone who submitted the correct answer, including Lance Dance, Jeff Skellington, Bort Voldemort, Michael James, Hallow Wolf 13, Bonkers Bricks, Twig Snap, Jason King, Chelsea Symes, and Caitlin the Greatlin. Next week is not a book-related question, but a MuggleCast-related question. How many podcast awards does MuggleCast have?
Now, why did you come up with this question?
This was, you know, I was asking my girlfriend for a couple of ideas for Quizzitch questions because I couldn't think of any. She's like, oh, well, how many podcast awards does MuggleCast have? I'm like, oh, okay. I can
I thought you were going to say, well, because MuggleCast received our first podcast awards in September of 2006. And now that we are approaching September, I thought I had to ask this question.
That's my cover answer. Yes, it was, in fact, in September of 2006 that our first one of these occurred.
Okay, great.
In Ontario, California.
Yes.
I remember that.
The Podcast and New Media Expo.
Where the heck is Ontario, California? I'm still wondering that too, and I went there.
Yeah, same. There was an airport right there too, which surprised me.
First and last time I ever went to Ontario,
speaking
California.
Speaking of first, at least first, I think that's the only time all seven of us were together in one place.
I think that's right.
That's correct.
And it's kind of sad because it was in the early days of MuggleCast. We never really reconvened. We did, different groups of us, but you're right. That was the largest get-together I think we ever had.
And Laura and Kevin and I got a new cell phone.
That's right. We did. Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
And wow. I just remember you wearing a specific shirt, Eric. It was like very light blue. But we can save that story for another time.
It was a youth medium.
It certainly
was. It
was
a very tight shirt.
It was not a women's shirt. It was a youth medium.
I believe you. I also remember Melissa, when we were in the parking garage of whatever hotel we were staying at, when she was backing out, she backed into another car. She left a nice note on there.
I remember that. So many memories.
All,
like, crammed in.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know how to transition out of that, but if you love this banter, we would love a review on the podcasting app that you listen to. So if they do allow you to leave a review, please do take a moment to do that through Apple Podcasts or wherever else. We would appreciate it. Also, follow us on social media. We are MuggleCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And we would love if you joined our community at patreon.com/MuggleCast. You'll get instant access to years of bonus MuggleCast installments, a personalized video thank you message from one of the four of us, behind-the-scenes looks at the show, access to our recording studio, early access to the episode as soon as we finish editing it, and a whole lot more. Patreon.com/MuggleCast. Thank you for your support. And thank you for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
And I'm Maura.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Happy September. Back to Hogwarts. choo-choo.